Good afternoon, and I'm glad to see all you here today. Brussels has one of the largest international press corps in the world, and I'm looking forward to be working with you. First, I want again to express my profound gratitude to Jens Stoltenberg for the tremendous job he has done in the past 10 years. Few leaders of this alliance faced a more challenging geopolitical environment. But Jens steered us through difficult times with a steady hand. He played a big part in making today's NATO stronger than ever, and he leaves behind an enduring legacy. I also want to thank the 32 allies for their trust and confidence, for choosing me as his successor. I'm deeply honored to serve as Secretary General of NATO, the most successful political military alliance in history. But NATO allies face serious challenges, and we have work to do. At the Washington Summit, allies set a clear course towards a safer world for the 1 billion people we serve. Now, it is my job to ensure that we collectively implement these decisions and continue to adapt our alliance to a more complex world. All 32 allies have their unique role to play, and there's nothing we cannot achieve together. I have three priorities. Ensure we have the capabilities to protect against any threat. Support Ukraine in fighting back against Russian aggression, and addressing the growing global challenges to Euro-Atlantic security. First, on our military capabilities. NATO's core mission is to ensure our collective deterrence and defense. Over the past decade, we have made tremendous progress in ensuring we have the forces and capabilities to deter and defend against any threat from any direction. But we must go further and faster to meet the enormous challenge ahead. We need more better equipped forces, a more robust transatlantic defense industry, increased defense production capacity, greater investment in innovation, and secure supply chains. Allies are already stepping up with plans to acquire thousands of air defense and artillery systems, many hundreds of modern aircraft, mostly fifth generation F-35s, as well as substantial high-end capabilities. But to truly match our capabilities with our needs, we need significantly more defense spending. And I will work with allies to ensure that we invest enough in the right areas and that we shoulder the burden for our collective defense equitably. We must each pay our fair share. My next priority is support for Ukraine. I've traveled to Ukraine several times in recent years, to Odessa, Kyiv, Bucha, Borodyanka and Kharkiv, close to the Russian border, where I witnessed firsthand the brutality of Russia's war of aggression and the bravery of Ukraine's people in their fight for freedom. Supporting Ukraine is the right thing to do, and it is also an investment in our own security, because an independent and democratic Ukraine is vital for peace and stability in Europe. And the cost of supporting Ukraine is far, far lower than the cost we would face if we allow Putin to get his way. I know from personal experience with the downing of flight MH17 how the conflict in Ukraine is not contained to the front lines. It was a tragedy that shook my country 10 years ago, one that must never be repeated. At the Washington Summit, allies agreed a support package for Ukraine, including with a NATO command, a long-term financial pledge, and an irreversible path to membership. I will work with allies to ensure that we fully implement our decisions and that we continue to bring Ukraine ever closer to NATO. NATO's focus must remain, obviously, on the Euro-Atlantic security, keeping our 1 billion people safe. But the threats we face are increasingly global, Therefore, I will deepen our partnerships with like-minded nations, near and far, that share our values. The European Union is NATO's unique and essential partner. There is potential to boost our cooperation in many areas, from supporting Ukraine to countering hybrid threats. We will also increase our engagement with partners across the Middle East, North Africa, and the Sahel regions to foster stability in our southern neighborhood. We must do more to counter the threat of terrorism to our nations and our populations. And further afield, we will enhance cooperation with our Indo-Pacific partners. Through its support for Russia's military industry, China has become a decisive enabler of Russia's war in Ukraine. China cannot continue to fuel the largest conflict in Europe since the Second World War without this impacting its interests and reputation. Russia is also receiving support from North Korea and Iran that allows it to sustain its illegal war. Later this month, Australia, Japan, New Zealand and South Korea are participating in a NATO defense ministerial for the first time. I look forward to welcoming them and forging a shared approach to our shared challenges. Finally, I want to thank all the men and women in uniform serving our alliance. You put into practice the defense of our freedoms every day, often at great risk to yourselves. Thank you for your service. I look forward to working with all of you, and I cannot wait to get started. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Thank you, Secretary General. We'll start with the BBC, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Jonathan Beale, BBC Secretary General. Congratulations on your appointment. Could I just ask you two questions? The first is, the last Secretary General made clear that he supported Ukraine in its request to use Western-supplied long-range weapons like Storm Shadow, ATACMS, to hit military targets inside Russia. What is your position on that? Do you support Ukraine in its request for Western countries to lift those restrictions, and will you be asking Western countries to do that? My second question is, you've yourself talked about the need for significant more defence spending. I just wondered whether you think you set a good example as the Dutch Prime Minister. You spent 10 years before you reached 2%. That was 10 years after NATO allies met in Cardiff to agree the 2% goal. Do you think you practice what you preach?
No. I'm happy that the Netherlands is now at 2%. Obviously, the 23rd, 24th of February 2022 was a wake-up call for many, also for my country, and I'm very happy that we are now at 2%, but obviously you have a point here that we should have done this earlier. Then on your other question, let's not forget Ukraine is fighting a war of self-defense, and that means that Ukraine has the right to defend itself. And as we know, international law, and according to international law, this right does not end at the border. So that means that supporting Ukraine's right to self-defense means that it is also possible for them to strike legitimate targets on the aggressor's territory. At the end, it's up to each ally to determine its support for Ukraine. That's not up to me. This is for the individual allies in their relationship with Ukraine. And we also have to be clear that not one single weapon alone will win the war. But obviously, this is an important debate.
And do you support Ukraine's request?
Well, I can understand Ukraine's request. I understand. So I'm with Jens Stoltenberg on this and what he said before. But in the end, it is up to each ally to decide what they want to do. And when I look at the particular allies which are involved here, they have now, for example, the United States and their leadership, they have spent tens of thousands, tens of billions in dollars to support Ukraine's right to self-defense. And let's be clear, Ukraine likely would not exist as a country today without the U.S. support.
Okay, we'll go to NPR Deutsche Welle. Terry?
Hi, thanks. Over here, Terry Schultz. Nice to meet you.
Nice
and
to meet you.
Welcome to NATO HQ.
Thank you.
I've covered you're the fourth Secretary General that I've covered. And to be fair, all of them come in saying that they're going to improve the cooperation with the European Union. Maybe you have more EU experience than the rest. So I'm interested in specifically how you're going to do this. Is this going to help on military mobility? And on the capability targets, you've got new defense plans. Biggest revamp in decades. How are you going to help the Sec Corps come up with these increased number of troops that they've promised? What are you going to do specifically about production capability? NATO's been saying for years, increased production capacity, and they're still not there. You've got lower stocks. What are some specifics you're going to do to get NATO to the war-fighting capability that it's promising with these new operational plans? Thanks.
Yeah, very good question. Maybe first to start with NATO, EU. Of course, I'm good friends with all the senior leaders in EU, and I'm looking forward to work with them, and I will have meetings soon scheduled with the incoming President of the European Council and with the President of the European Commission, who will continue in that role, and of course the other main players. And I welcome, I must say, EU's efforts to defence. I think there is a clear recognition, both on the side of NATO and on the European Union, that we both value a more capable European defence. Of course, being complementary to and interoperable with NATO. But that's also what I hear back from the EU side. Nobody wants parallel structures, or nobody wants, duplication of what NATO already is doing. So I think we can be on one page on this. But clearly also the EU has to now think about how to implement all these policies. And I'm really looking forward to work with them in conjunction, because at the end we have the same goal, and that is to keep also this part of the world safe. On industry, this is clearly for me a priority, because without a strong transatlantic defence industry, there can be no defence. That's clear. Well, in the past few years, let's agree that we have seen a marked increase in defence production across the lines. We are producing more shells, more ships, and more missiles than we have done for decades. So that is the positive. But we need to go further, we need to go faster. That is for our own deterrence and defence, but also in support of Ukraine. I think NATO has the tools to help increase production, aggregate ally demand, for example, and deliver capabilities. And also at the Washington Summit, as you know, the defense industrial pledge was agreed, and I will be delivering on that pledge in the coming months. So this is a clear priority, and I'll work with my team and with allies to make sure that we ramp up defense production, that we look into the reasons why sometimes it is difficult for companies to do that. There might be this issue of more longer-term contracts, which I'm hearing, and there are other issues, and you probably have heard the same. So we have to work on them and make sure that there is no excuse for anyone not to have a bigger defence production in overall size than we have at the moment.
Thank you. I'll go to Reuters over there at the end.
Secretary General Andrew Gray from Reuters over here.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
A simple question. Is Ukraine winning the war against Russia's invasion? And what can you and NATO allies do to change the reality on the battlefield?
Well, clearly, Ukraine is fighting this war of self-defense. And as you know, I'm absolutely impressed by what Ukraine is doing. They have shown with courage. They have shown also with creativity. They can push back the Russian forces. When you ask me what is the situation now on the battlefield, clearly it's not easy. It's difficult. There's on the one hand Ukraine's army, as you know, holding on part of the Kursk region in Russia. But we also have seen Russian forces making some limited gains on the battlefield this year. But that progress, don't forget, has been costly. Recent estimates I'm getting, and probably you also, of Russian losses run at about 1,000 killed or wounded a day. 1,000 killed or wounded a day. And that is on top of the total of 500,000 already killed or wounded. And therefore it is crucial that because of this continuing Russian onslaught, that allies are providing the billions of additional aid. And as you know, allied leaders will be at Ramstein in a few weeks to address Ukraine's most urgent battlefield needs and to coordinate the further support.
Okay. Over to ZDF.
Meneer Rutte, Piet Eekman, ZDF. U spreekt over de niet aflatende steun aan Oekraïne. Maar die steun aan Oekraïne ligt heel moeilijk, zowel in Amerika, toenemend moeilijker in Amerika en ook bij de Europese bondgenoten. Wat denkt u, wat kunt u daaraan doen en hoe lang is het nog vol te houden? En de tweede vraag is, denkt u dat u tijdens uw ambtstijd als generaalsecretaris van de NATO, dat u nog gaat meemaken dat Oekraïne werkelijk lid wordt van de NATO?
Well, the first question is on whether the support for Ukraine will continue, both on the European side as well as on the US side. And I'm absolutely optimistic about this. Because everyone I speak with in America, on the Republican side, on the Democrat side, but also here in Europe, understands that if Russia would win in Ukraine, if Putin would get what he wants, that would ultimately mean that our security situation is in a much more difficult state. That it means that he would gain one quarter of his territory and one quarter of his population extra. So this is the direct defense impact it would have. And obviously this is also about our values, why we are helping and defending Ukraine. I worked with Donald Trump for 4 years. I've been in close talks with Kamala Harris. I respect them both very much. I am absolutely convinced that on this issue, they both see what is necessary. And when you take, for example, President Trump, thanks to him, we pushed up the defense spending. We sped up the defense spending since the summit here in 2018 particularly. But also what he said on China is now very much taken on board, I think, by many of us. Kamala Harris has a record as vice president and now as a candidate in defending American values. So I think on the U.S. side, it will be hard work to make sure that we all stay united. But at the end, I'm convinced that we all understand why this is necessary, because our defense and our values are at stake here. So this is very fundamental. And your other question was on... Yes, so, clearly, as I said in my introductory remarks, there has been the language in Washington on Ukraine and that their future place is in NATO. Of course, what we now first have to deal with is the war and to make sure that Ukraine prevails and that Ukraine prevails as an independent, sovereign and democratic nation. That is now the priority. And... I don't want to get into now what type of pathways there are to NATO membership, because there are so many varieties here and so many options. And that will very much also depend, of course, on the Ukrainian leadership and how this war evolves.
Okay, we'll go to Ukraine news agency, Dmytro.
Dmytro Skurko, National News Agency of Ukraine. Thank you for the floor.
Thank you.
Russian President Putin recently presented his new nuclear doctrine and decreased the threshold for use of the nuclear weapons against non-nuclear states. Clearly, it is a threat for Ukraine, but also for NATO countries who are supporting Ukraine. My question is, would that somehow impact the support NATO provide to Ukraine? And the second part of the question, do you consider the necessary to maybe adjust the nuclear deterrence NATO now have? Thank you so much.
Well, of course, we hear regular threats from the Kremlin, and it's true that Putin's nuclear rhetoric is reckless and irresponsible, but at the same time, let me make absolutely clear, we do not see any imminent threat of nuclear weapons being used. And that's what I want to say about this at this moment, because let him talk about his nuclear arsenal. He wants us also to discuss his nuclear arsenal, and I think we shouldn't. We should just acknowledge the fact that clearly there is no imminent threat of nuclear weapons being used, and that is important. And generally, not just on nuclear, but more generally, if you would give in to Putin's threat, that would set a precedent. That using military force allows a country to get what it wants. And we cannot do that.
Okay, I'll go to NOS.
Thank you. Congratulations. Thank you. We are talking here, there's just been announced another air alert in Kiev. And the Kremlin said today that they do not expect any major policy change from NATO's new Secretary General. That's you. My question is, how are you going to surprise the Kremlin?
Well, first of all, let me say that the Kremlin on this particular issue has excellent sources. And I couldn't have said it in a better way than they did in that press release. Because I'm very much an admirer of Jens Stoltenberg and of his agenda. Obviously, over time, you will see different emphasis on different issues. You will see a difference in style. That's unavoidable. We are different persons. But I think the agenda he and the Council set out, the decisions taken in the Washington summit, they are all necessary to make sure that we can not only today counter any threat against NATO territory, and we can. But also in the future, we will be ready to do so. But obviously, over time, things will change because also the situation changes. And one of the issues I want really to spend time on, as I said before, is this issue. And I know that this is also very close to Jens Stoltenberg's heart, is defense production, the industry, and how to get them on board and to make sure that the big defense industry companies will open more, will have more shifts, will work 5-6 shifts through the week, including the weekends, to produce what we need in terms of missiles and all the other stuff we need. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Interfax Ukraine, right there.
Thank you, Farah. News agency Interfax Ukraine, Irina Sommer. Secretary General, what will be your approach to Ukraine's membership in NATO? Are you going to build a consensus to invite Ukraine as soon as possible, or it will be let's wait and see? Thank you well.
Thank you well, and thank you, and good to see you. I think the Washington summit clearly took the next step in the summit conclusions, and I'm very happy about that. Obviously, what we now have to focus on is the war effort, and to make sure that, and this is the paradox, the more we help Ukraine at the moment, the sooner this will end. Putin has to realize that we will not give in, that we want Ukraine to prevail. In the end, when you talk about peace, it's up to the Ukrainian government to decide when they are at a stage that they want to discuss peace and peace talks, etc. That's for later. And obviously, we have to look at all these developments over the next 6 months, year, 2 years, also in the context of a possible future NATO membership. But it's very difficult at this stage to exactly predict how the one and the other might, yes or no, be connected.
Okay, I'll go to NHK.
Thank you, Satya, from NHK. On the IP4 cooperation, I'd like to ask, could you elaborate more on how you plan to deepen the ties with the IP4 countries, and in what fields you wish to deepen the cooperation?
Well, I think this cooperation is crucial. And I was so happy that at the leaders' level, the last few summits, we saw the prime ministers of New Zealand, Australia, and Japan, and the president of South Korea participating. And I'm so happy that the defense ministers will participate mid-October in the next defense ministerial. That is crucial. Why is this crucial? Because Russia gets support from North Korea, from Iran, but also from China. There are also other issues at stake in the Indo-Pacific. And that is why we need to strengthen our ties with our Indo-Pacific partners. And we also have to discuss to get more and more meat to the bone. And, of course, we can think of many ways to do that. I'm not going now to go into what that particularly might be, because I want also to discuss this with the defense ministers and with the leaders. But clearly, there is now a base. And I know that in all four countries, Australia, New Zealand, South Korea, Japan, it is very much high on the agenda. And they are there for a reason in these summits, because they sense that there is a togetherness, that there are global threats we have to face. So there's ample opportunity, but I think I should first discuss with them some options to, based on this well-established cooperation, take the next steps. But clearly we are going to do that. That's absolutely my aim.
Okay, I'll go to TRT at the top there.
Mr. Secretary General, welcome to Brussels and
thank
congratulations.
You, so much.
You visited Turkey last April and you met with President Erdogan. As you know, Turkey has expectations such as the fight against terrorism and the lifting of embargoes between allies. And at the same time, during Stoltenberg's term, a special coordinator for counterterrorism was established in NATO. So in this sense, as a Secretary General, what will be your approach regarding this matter? Thank you.
This is a very important issue. And I discussed it multiple times in meetings I had with President Erdogan. He and I have worked in all the years that I was Prime Minister. And of course, he was already Prime Minister before I became Prime Minister. And then he became President of the Republic. I think I could say we are close friends. And we see eye to eye on this. And clearly, fighting terrorism is something we also have to take up within the NATO context. He is not only pushing for that, I'm absolutely receptive to this, because we have to work on this in conjunction. We will do that, we will have those discussions. And also I think it is important that within NATO there are no boundaries in terms of who you can supply whatever. I know there is also sensitivity there, and we have to work also on that.
Thank you. I'll go to Bloomberg, the back.
Welcome. Congrats, Secretary General. You mentioned China. I want to ask, is there a red line for China in its support to Russia that would trigger a strong NATO response?
Well, at the moment, I think the problem we are facing with China, as I said in my introduction, is that it is an enabler. It is an enabler of Russia's brutal war of aggression. And I was visiting, in my previous role as Prime Minister of the Netherlands, I was visiting China mid-March and had discussions there with the senior leadership. And I said, I don't understand why, for close friends, as they call me and others here in Europe, you bring us under threat that you are supporting Russia, that you are delivering the microelectronics, that you are delivering the raw materials, the sanctions circumvention, the dual-use goods in general. And this has got to stop. And it has an impact on their standing in the world. That's clear. So I'm not now literally going to answer your question, but clearly this is an issue we are facing. And is also a reason that we have to work closely together also with the friends in the Indo-Pacific. And Russia, and this is another problem, is not getting all of this for free. They are not getting the ammunition from North Korea for free. They are not getting the missiles and drones from Iran for free. They are not getting the microelectronics and raw materials and other dual-use goods and all the sanctions circumvention from China for free. What Russia has to deliver back to them in return is clearly helping them to develop their programs, including missile programs and nuclear programs. And they are violating UN Security Council resolutions. So this is really a big issue we are facing.
Okay, we'll go to Kurdistan 24.
Thank you, Bas Janssen, reporter from Kurdistan 24. Good to see you.
Good to see you again.
I'm very happy to see you. Over the past decade, you have very good relationship with the Kurdish authority, especially in Iraqi Kurdistan region. So, especially during the combat against ISIS, Daesh, could you give me or could you promise them you will not leave them alone and continue to provide and support and training Kurdish Peshmerga to against ISIS? Thank you.
Yes, and in general, Iraq, if I may put it like that. Obviously, we also work closely with the Kurdish region and with Erbil, but also generally with Iraq. We work with our partners to build, as you know, stronger security forces. We are fighting terrorism. Obviously, fully respecting Iraq's sovereignty and independence. I know that Jens Stoltenberg, my predecessor, he met the Iraqi Prime Minister just a couple of days ago. I think it was in New York. And we will stay in close contact with the government. And obviously, at the same time, also very much focusing on the safety of our people there and taking all the precautions necessary.
Thank you. We'll go to AFP. Max.
Secretary General, thank you very much. Max Delaney, AFP. Two questions. Do you think it is possible to do a deal to end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours? And secondly, on Trump, you said you're not worried about him, but this is a man who said that he was encouraged Russia to do whatever it wants with countries in NATO that don't pay enough on defense. Is there any place for language like that that undermines the Article 5 guarantee in the alliance?
My point is this. I worked with Donald Trump, and I think we have to acknowledge that on the two issues I mentioned before on the defense spending, when Jens Stoltenberg started, it was three countries delivering the 2%. It is now 23 countries delivering on the 2%. And the overall spending in NATO now is at 2% or more. And this is a huge thing. I would say he, not only he, but also thanks to him pushing this, has been achieved. And I also mentioned China, that when he started to talk about China, I believe not everybody was realizing the threat that we had to face and the role it is now playing in Ukraine, for example, and in the Ukraine war. So on these issues, I would think that he had the foresight to work on this, and I want to acknowledge that. I'm not going to comment on everything Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, the vice president, is saying. But generally, my impression and my gut feel is, based on all the talks I've had on both sides of the aisle, including with the candidates, is that they understand that in the end, the transatlantic relationship is crucial not just for Europe. It's not there for an historical reason that they didn't want to repeat a mistake after the First World War not being involved in Europe. No, it is crucial for their defense, for their security. Because if Russia would be successful in gaining more influence in this part of the world, it would be a direct security threat towards America, towards the United States, and that includes if Putin would get what he wants in Ukraine. So that's why I'm making those comments, and I don't want to react on every syllable, every sentence any of the American politicians are uttering, but this is my general conviction.
Thank you. We'll take one final question from Ansa and wrap it up. Thank you all.
Hello, Secretary General Mattia Bagnoli, ANSA, the National Italian News Agency. Two questions, if I may. The first one, in your previous job, one of your main concerns was to be sure that Italy and other EU countries would spend less and balance the book. Now, ironically, you will need to push for Italy and others to actually spend more. So what is your...
balance the book.
And balance the book, by the way, yes. What is your strategy here, given the fact that budgets in many countries are, as you know, already stretched? And secondly, you talked about partnerships. So what's your vision for the Sidon neighborhood? What can NATO do, really, to be more relevant there?
Yes, well, I'm very happy that Jens Stoltenberg appointed a special representative for the Sidon neighborhood. And I had the opportunity last week to have extensive talks on this issue, and I think there are ample opportunities to work closer together. And we have to develop this over the coming months. On your first question, well, clearly this is an issue facing many governments. But hey, at the end, this is what politicians are there to do. And I know that Giorgia Meloni, my successor in the Netherlands, Olaf Scholz, all the leaders here on the European side, but also in Canada and the US, we know that this is our task, to balance the books, yes, to make sure that you have a situation where you can hand over to the next generation in a way that the state finances are sustainable, but also to make sure that the priorities which need to be financed can be financed. And there are various ways to do that, but I will not, of course, go into that, because that is different for every country. What I liked in the EU was that the country-specific recommendations have now been made more central to the decision-making process. And I think that system of the CSRs, the country-specific recommendations, is an excellent one, because it addresses the issues in my country. And my country is now struggling to get the 5 billion from the COVID fund. My government already, and this government is working on that to implement all the policies so that the 5 billion will be released. I know that all the governments are working on that. And it means that in return for more reforms and making your economies more resilient, the EU is also willing to help, in this case, with the COVID repair money. But in the end, that's up to the national governments. But it is clear we have to defend our alliance. We have to make sure that our nations, our people, our values are defended. At this moment, that's absolutely the case. If anybody attacks NATO, we are ready to react, and we will win. But we have to make sure that it is also the case in the coming years. Oh, let's see. It's not wise to talk about transport, because it is also related to your security. So,
you said your home away from home. Is Brussels your new home, or will The Hague be your home forever?
Oh, but I will also spend some time in The Hague, but most of my time, of course, in Brussels. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to that. A fantastic city and a fantastic country.
Thank you all.
Thank you all. I look forward to meeting you many more times in the next years. Thank you so much.